In her program notes for her composition Blue Cathedral, Jennifer Higdon describes her inspiration thus. Blue represents all potential and the progression of journeys. Cathedral represents a place of beginnings, endings, solitude, fellowship, contemplation, knowledge, and growth. The words of composer Jennifer Higdon. Jennifer Higdon's Blue Cathedral will be just one of the pieces played when the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, under the direction of Gerardo Edelstein, celebrates music composed in America on Tuesday, February the 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Arts Centre. Higdon's Blue Cathedral will be followed by Copland's Quiet City, Bernstein's Three Dances episodes from On the Town, and Antonín Dvořák's Symphony No. 9 from The New World. Gerardo Edelstein came into the WVIA Williamsport studio recently to tell us more about the pieces selected for this upcoming concert.
Jennifer Higdon, one of the most prominent female composers these days, she has been very popular lately, especially because she won again another Grammy. So recently she won for an oboe concerto, a viola concerto. It's a wonderful recording. And years back, I believe it's 2010, she won for her percussion concerto. So she keeps winning these Grammy Awards, and she also won a Pulitzer Prize. And what I heard is that this Blue Cathedral piece was already performed more than 600 times all over the world. It is really amazing. And when I heard it for the first time in a recording with Robert Spano, I felt captivated by the music. I mean, it's a beautiful piece, very well written, very well orchestrated. Jennifer has quite a bit of connections with Pennsylvania, actually, because she studied at UPenn. She got her PhD here in Pennsylvania. And then she was composer in residence for two of the greatest orchestras in Pennsylvania, the Pittsburgh Symphony and the Philadelphia Orchestra. So I was really very curious to hear her music and see, you know, if it's something that we could perform here. I really, really was very impressed and very captivated. It was beautiful sounds, the way she treats the orchestra, and very colorful. And one thing that you will probably be interested in listening in particular is that some sounds that you will hear close to the end, I will tell, you know, you and the audience what it is, because I'm sure I will get a lot of questions about these strange sounds coming out of the orchestra. She requests crystal glasses, all tuned with different pitches. So what basically what we'll do, and you may have seen this on television, you know, magicians or actually even performers, you know, playing on crystal glasses. You fill up the glasses with different levels of water just to create different pitches, and then you water your fingers, and then going around the edges of the glass, of the top of the glass, you produce different sounds. So she asks for several players to put underneath their seats several of those crystal glasses, and at certain moments of the piece, holding them and produce those interesting sounds. And in addition to that, she asks for Chinese bells, and they have also a particular sound. Also will be distributed among the musicians. There are about 50 of those. And close to the end of the piece, they have to hold those Chinese bells and shake them. Of course, the first time I heard this piece, and where is that sound coming from? What exactly is this? And then I discovered the beautiful coloristic additions to the piece. But now just talking about a little bit about the piece, so other than the beautiful sounds, she wrote this, it was a commission by the Curtis Institute of Music for their 75th anniversary. And it was coincidentally at the same time she lost her brother. So this is kind of, homage to her brother. He played the clarinet and she play the flute. She got also a degree in flute performance. So then we can hear in the piece a lot of a conversation between the clarinet and the flute, resemblance of their wonderful relationship. Why she called it Blue Cathedral? Because she imagined a crystal, actually, cathedral with crystal glass looking up where you could see the sky. So that's why the idea of getting into this kind of a crystal cathedral and looking up, watching this beautiful blue sky.
You talk about hearing this piece and it immediately connecting with you. And I have to say that you have a piece in this performance that had that effect on me. The very first time I heard Copland's Quiet City, I just fell in love with it.
Such a pretty short piece. It's just orchestrated for strings, trumpet solo, and English horn solo. And as you know, we have two fabulous principals soloists at the symphony who will play this beautifully, Dale Orris trumpet and Sue Leib English horn. Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, it's one of my Copland favorites. And it's interesting, you know, Copland was a man that spent most of his life looking for connections between his music and his homeland. So, like Dvorak later, we will talk about him, felt like he needed to write in a Czech spirit, Bohemian spirit, and use as many tunes that will connect him with his homeland. And I feel the same with Copland. Perhaps he was the first American composer that we can say, you know, is very nationalistic in a way, because he went out and listened to the music around the country and looked for musical ideas that will represent American music. So this Quiet City will hear jazz, of course. Why it's called Quiet City is the idea of a trumpet player, because the piece is based on a play. It's a trumpet player playing during the night, and with the ideas of the city, the resemblance of a big city, a large city at night. And of course, you hear jazz, blues, and things that you will normally hear in a large city, a beautiful city like, you know, New York, for instance. He really could understand and could really incorporate all those tunes that he heard into his music. And I know that I'm jumping ahead, but I think about Dvorak, who wrote his only symphony that he wrote in America. Dvorak, when we came to America, and he actually was the director of the National Conservatory that was based in New York at that time, unfortunately closed. And part of it is because Juilliard started rising and Juilliard School became the school for the performing arts. But when he came to America, he was fascinated by the sounds of the African-American spirituals, the Indian tunes, or even, you know, just the pop music, but he will hear, you know, on the street, in bars, and in places that he will frequently go. So he tried to use some of that, incorporate some of that into his music. I have to say he was successful in a way, because you can hear some of that, even of the rhythms into the symphony. But of course, spending all his life writing nationalistic Czech music, when you hear for the first time the piece, you don't even notice that there is some connection to America until somebody will tell you, oh, do you know that this piece is called The New World and that Dvorak wrote it in America together with the American Quartet. That's another big famous piece that he wrote here before going back. And the story is interesting also because the slow movement that has this gorgeous, gorgeous tune played by the English horn was used by one of his students to write the famous Going Home song. So it was not Dvorak, but one of his students who wrote the song inspired by this beautiful and gorgeous tune.
And those of us who hear it and know it, of course, initially we think it must be an old, old folk tune because it has that wonderful, evocative, bucolic feel about it.
Exactly. And people say that as he was spending his time here, he got homesick, like everyone who is away from his homeland. So that's what inspired him to write such a beautiful tune.
And if people know no other little piece from the New World Symphony, they'll be able to hum that, won't they?
Absolutely. It's one of the most popular symphonies ever written, I must say. Every time that you Google and put which ones are the top symphonies written or the most popular symphonies ever written, the New World Symphony will come always on top, on the top 10. You know, you can ask me why, basically all what we just talked before, but, you know, Dvorak had the ability to write beautiful melodies. And actually, the great Johannes Brahms, who was Dvorak's big supporter, I mean, Dvorak, he actually thanked Brahms all his life for, you know, helping him develop his career. Brahms said, "I wished I would write melodies as beautiful as Dvorak does." And we're talking about Brahms, one of the greatest composers of the 19th century. Not that Brahms did not write beautiful melodies, because most of his music, you know, to not say all of his music, is absolutely gorgeous. But for him to say that about Dvorak, it's a great honor, and you can not agree more from that statement. The symphony starts with a very evocative introduction, almost like the slow movement, that gets very dramatic immediately. You know, the whole first movement has this kind of, I would say, impatient feeling with, you know, the sounds of horns and the beautiful second theme, you know, played by the flute, and these contrasting musical ideas, a little bit of a drama, these uncomfortable situations, this glorious ending. You can find it all in just one movement. And that will develop later on in this gorgeous second movement, the traditional scherzo as a third, and finish with quite dramatic, I have to say, movement with the famous popular trumpet theme that, as you mentioned, if people hum the slow movement, I'm sure they will go home also singing the main theme of the last one as well. You know, as I said, I jumped ahead.
Yes, because the Dvorak is going to be the center, second part, yes, second of half. The concert. And of course, I wonder if the next bit you're going to talk about isn't your favorite.
Aha! You got me on that one. Leonard Bernstein. He has been always, for me, an inspiration. Although I've never had the chance to study with him, I had many chances to go to concerts and watch him actually rehearse. Wasn't mostly in Israel, where I spent 5 years, and he frequently will come and conduct the Israel Philharmonic. So I will try to make my way into the rehearsals and just enjoy the way he would work with the orchestra, the relationship he had with the orchestra. And I was lucky enough to perform many of his pieces, including the big Mass just a few years ago. That it was an incredible production, huge production with singers, dancers, orchestras, bands, jazz orchestra, rock band. It's one of those humongous in very Bernstein style pieces. What we are going to perform is three episodes from On the Town, one of his famous early Broadway musical with the famous New York, New York song that everyone will also recognize and can hum along also. See, this concert is a lot of humming along, right? A lot of incredible tunes. As I said, Bernstein inspired me not only, you know, as a conductor, because I watched him work and always was fascinated by the easiness and the musicality and the way he will approach the music and the musicians. It was always absolutely an inspiration.
So he wasn't a fraught and angry type of man? He was...
No, you know what? Now that you're mentioning this, one of the rehearsals I went, this was, I think it was one of his last concerts in Israel. No, it was just, he looked with lots of spirit, like always very passionate, very exciting. But physically, I could tell he was declining already. But I saw him before coming on stage for that last concert, jumping, you know, just trying to get feet before the concert. And I was impressed to see that from the old man. But what most impressed me is in one of the rehearsals, I think it probably was the first, as soon as he came on stage to greet the musicians, of course, there was a massive applause, you know, from the entire orchestra. And he spent at least 15 minutes hugging people, saying, "Hello, how are you? Have you been?" I mean, I said, "Hey, wait a minute. This is time for the rehearsal." And he spent the first 15 minutes greeting everyone. And, you know, he just wanted the connection with the musicians before even start working. It has been always an inspiration for me, and I truly enjoy performing his pieces. And this is no exception. It's three brief episodes from his On the Town musical. Of course, you can find in this music all the elements, the early Bernstein elements, you know, mostly musical, jazz, and fun. It's really, really fun stuff. Fun to perform, fun to listen, and I'm sure the audience will have a great time.
All of these pieces were composed in The United States.
Exactly. So made in America. Yes, it was intentional. Of course, when I prepared this program, I really wanted to showcase music that was written here, you know, by great composers. Because, of course, people know Copland and, you know, Bernstein. Now they will discover Jennifer Higdon, that is a living composer. And it's a great opportunity for younger audiences that are not familiar with this type of performances or this type of music, just to come to a concert and hear a piece by a living composer. I'm really proud that we are presenting another piece by a female composer. It's getting more and more attention. Just not only in composer, I've seen more and more female conductors that are rising and making the news. It's wonderful to hear. I'm glad it's happening.
When can we come and enjoy this wonderful concert?
This is the day before Valentine's Day. So it's the perfect gift for your loved one, even though it's the day before. But you can start it a little earlier, because it will be the night of the February the 13th at 7:30. It's a Tuesday at the Community Arts Center.
Gerardo Edelstein, conductor of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, speaking about the program for the upcoming concert on Tuesday, February the 13th, when the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra celebrates music composed in the New World at the Community Arts Centre. The concert will begin at 7:30 p.m. For tickets, you can call the Community Arts Centre box office at 570-326-2424, or you can go online to the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra website at williamsportsymphony.org. Thank you very much to Gerardo Edelstein.
And thank you to you, WVIA's Fiona Powell.